You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Let me tell you about a no-brainer way to improve your finances. Stop letting the big banks use you as their ATM. Every week, thousands are switching from big banks and opening checking accounts at Aspiration because they're fed up with outrageous and wimpy interest rates. Aspiration will pay you up to 100 times the interest paid by big banks, and you'll have totally free access to every ATM in the world. And Aspiration is a financial firm with a conscience. They give a full 10% of their earnings to charity and let you see your own sustainability score on your purchases. Check it out at aspiration.com/kickass. And now, enjoy the podcast. Hi, I'm Ben Mathis, and welcome to Kick-Ass News. Just in case you forgot, this coming Sunday is Father's Day. So in honor of dads everywhere, today I'm talking with Brett McKay, the founder and editor-in-chief of The Art of Manliness, the largest independent men's lifestyle magazine on the web with over 10 million monthly page views. Brett is also the host of the popular Art of Manliness podcast and the author of 8 books, including The Art of Manliness, Classic Skills and Manners for the Modern Man, The Art of Manliness Manvotionals, Timeless Wisdom and Advice on Living the 7 Manly Virtues, Heading Out on Your Own, 31 Basic Life Skills in 31 Days, 30 Days to a Better Man, What is Honor and How to Revive It, and his latest book, The Illustrated Art of Manliness, The Essential How-To Guide, Survival, Chivalry, Self-Defense, Style, Car Repair, and More. In the book, Brett McKay and best-selling illustrator Ted Slampiak help men be the best fathers, brothers, sons, and men they can be with more than 100 practical skills every modern man needs to know, from dancing, romancing, and shining your shoes to disarming an attacker, splitting logs, and starting a fire with your smartphone. Today, I'll talk with Brett about his experience as a father, as well as his advice on how to be an awesome uncle, how to manage stress, and use your baby as exercise equipment. We discuss changing definitions of manliness, what many are calling a modern crisis in manhood, and why men don't fix things anymore. Brett gives a crash course in situational awareness and tips on how to fend off a bear attack, how to escape from the trunk of a car, and how to land a plane in an emergency. Plus, Teddy Roosevelt, the perfect shoe shine, changing diapers, carrying a handkerchief, and how to make decisions like General Eisenhower. Coming up with Manly Man Brett McKay in just a moment. Brett McKay is the founder and publisher of ArtOfManliness.com, the largest independent men's interest magazine on the web, which he runs with his wife, Kate. He's also the host of the popular Art of Manliness podcast. Now he even has a new book, just in time for Father's Day, called The Illustrated Art of Manliness, The Essential How-To Guide, Survival, Chivalry, Self-Defense, Style, Car Repair, and More. Brett, thanks for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me, Ben.
Well, I've been a fan of your site and your podcast for a while now. You're all about teaching guys how to become more competent in a whole range of skills and teaching the values and virtues of being a man. I read that you started the Art of Manliness website kind of on a lark when you were in law school. What inspired you to do this originally?
Yeah, so I was in a Borders bookstore one night, taking a break from studying, and was looking at the men's magazines and just looking at the headlines. And I realized that every month I saw the exact same thing with these magazines. You're going to see articles on how to get six-pack abs, sex tips, promoting a lifestyle that no average guy could afford. Talking like $3,000 cashmere sweaters and things like that. And it just rang hollow with me. Didn't resonate with me. So I decided, you know what? I can buy a domain name for $10 and hosting for $10. How about I start the men's magazine that I'd want to read? So that's what I did. Bought the domain name Art of Manliness and went from there. And that was in 2008. And here we are almost 10 years later. And it's grown into this thing that I never thought. I didn't think it was going to be this. I thought I'd be an attorney, but this is what I do full time now.
Oh, so you're full time with this. You don't practice law anymore?
No, I never practiced law. I didn't take the bar exam. I graduated law school. By the time I graduated law school, that I could eke out a living doing it. So that's what I decided to do.
I think a lot of guys feel like the definition of what it means to be a man is somewhat in flux right now. And what a man is supposed to do is changing right under our feet. And certainly it's being more broadly defined than in previous generations. How do you define what it means to be a man?
Yeah, so we get a lot of inspiration from classical Greece and Rome that are simple, but they have very rich definitions. So for the ancient Romans, like our word virtue that we have today comes from the word virtus, which means manliness. And so in order to be a man for the ancient Romans, you had to acquire virtus. And the way you did that was developing virtues like strength, like physical and martial strength. You had to be good in battle. But it also meant developing virtues like temperance and prudence, sort of softening the rough edge of sort of that more virile, more aggressive masculinity. They wanted to kind of develop the whole man. And that idea of manliness we had in the West for a long time. I mean, I remember reading history books where they talk about the manliness of George Washington. And I'm thinking, well, the way they're using manliness isn't how we're using it today. Because I think a lot of times when people use the word manly, they think like very cartoonish behavior, right?
Yeah. You know,
six-pack beers and monster trucks and, you know, just brawling. And like, that's what George Washington wasn't really doing that. And so what it was, they had that sort of classical idea of what it meant to be a man. We're trying to revive this classical idea of manliness, which I think is a really positive idea, just trying to bring that back for folks.
Do you feel that we're sort of in the midst of a crisis of manliness right now? Perhaps it's somewhat under threat?
No, yeah. So this was interesting. Yeah, there is been a lot of ink spilt about sort of this crisis of masculinity. Now, I think it's important for people to understand this isn't something new. We often think this is something we've never seen before. We've had this sort of discussion about what's going on with men several times in American history. You can go back to the turn of the 20th century. And we were having really the same sort of conversation, what does it mean to be a man? And are men too soft and things like this? And in response to that, you had the Boy Scouts of America. The fear was that men were becoming soft because they're moving to the cities and machines were replacing the hardiness that men had to have to work the land. And I think you can say something similar is going on today as we transition from an industrial to an information service economy. We no longer need men to work in factories. And so what does it mean to be a man when you don't have to use your sort of brute strength and sort of those stoic virtues in order to, you know, do that sort of blue collar job? So we figured it out before, we'll figure it out again. So I'm not too worried about it. And I know a lot of people are concerned, but I think everything will work out in the end.
I should also point out that this is not just some kind of Tim Allen tool time version of manliness. You cover a lot of things like how to change a tire, how to build a campfire, but you also encompass an expanding range of manly virtues and skills that might not have fit into the 1950s Don Draper idea of manliness. You cover how to change a diaper, how to put a baby in a car seat, how to make an omelet.
Right. Yeah. As things change, we have to adapt. And, Yeah, the idea of manliness, I think it's flexible. But I think you can still kind of hold true to that idea of, you know, we kind of focus on, you know, the differentiating ourselves, you know, not so much, you know, put the focus on the difference between men and women, which is there, but more on the emphasis on like the difference between being a boy and a man, right? Mm-hmm. Being a well-functioning, competent adult male. So yeah, you need to have certain skills. If you're going to be a dad, you know, men are expected and sort of, I think not only expected, they want to be more involved, with parenting. So you got to learn how to do those sort of things. A functioning grown man in today's 21st century America.
And having said all that, there's nothing more manly than chopping wood. And in your very first chapter on The Manly Adventurer, you teach us how to properly chop a log. Now, I guess I had it all wrong. I've never done it, but I was surprised to read that you don't actually use an axe for splitting wood, huh?
No, you use it. It's called a maul. It's a little duller than an axe. If you use an axe, what happens, it's so sharp that it'll just get stuck in the log. What a maul does, it's a little duller. And so what it does, it doesn't chop. It splits the wood. Sort of, it's like a wedge. So yeah, you got to look for cracks that are already in the log and try to aim for that, and the log will just split in half.
And in the same section, you tell men how to survive a bear attack. You even go into what to do if you encounter a grizzly bear versus a black bear. So what should I do if I don't want to end up like Leo in The Revenant?
Right. Grizzly bears, there's really not much you can do except for just huddle up into a ball and okay. Let him, you know, have his way with you, and he'll go away. Act like you're dead, pretty much. They're mean, vicious bears. The black bears, you can do some things where you can, you know, act like you're bigger, lift up your arms, get sticks, shout, and that oftentimes will scare them. But also, you know, if you're out in the woods in an area that has bears, good idea, might keep some bear repellent on you. Mm-hmm. It's basically pepper spray on steroids. That can help out as well.
And you get pretty MacGyver-y in this chapter. Most of us would feel rather helpless if our cell phone died, but you come up with some handy uses for a cell phone as a survival tool. What can I do with my cell phone even if it's not charged?
Right. So let's say you have a cell phone that's not charged in the middle of the wilderness. It's pretty much useless to you at this point. So you can bust it up, and there's all sorts of things inside the phone that you can use to make a fish hook out of or a fish lure. You can use, the glass, there's like a reflective part in the cell phone that you can use as a mirror signal to hopefully get a plane to notice you or a helicopter or something like that. And you can even use some of the things in there to start a fire, maybe the battery. So there's a lot you can do. You just have to be creative and think outside the box.
You have a section here on how to land a plane. How does one land a plane without crashing?
Basically, if you're ever in that position where you have to land a plane, you want to get on and just talk to the air traffic controller. Let them know, hey, the pilot's incapacitated. I have no idea what I'm doing. And then they'll pretty much guide you through the landing process. But yeah, it's just a matter of lining up the plane with the controls, then using the throttle and the brake to take yourself to a nice, hopefully soft landing.
So the key here is to accept help. don't be too much of a guy and say, yeah, I got this.
No, you don't want to do this on your own.
Okay. Yeah, another one of these types of situations, how to escape from the trunk of a car. How do we do that?
Right. Well, thankfully, most new cars today on the market have a device inside. So if you're ever stuck in there, you can just pull that and get out. But one tactic you can use, it's not so much escaping, but like having someone notice that you're in the trunk of the car, is you kick out the light, the rear light, mm-hmm. and just stick your hand out and wave frantically so that hopefully someone will see you there.
I should point out that the book is illustrated, and I saw in one of the illustrations, it looked like you were using a tire jack to bust open the
trunk.
That
is another option you can do. So, you know, oftentimes the tire jack is in the trunk of the car, so you can bust that out and just crank open the trunk. That's another tool that you can use.
What do you say to guys who might say, well, the odds of me getting mauled by a bear or having to land a plane are so remote, why should I even have to know these things?
Well, it's better to know it and not need it, and need it and not know it. So yeah, you're probably never going to have, this is never going to happen to you, probably, hopefully. But when it does, it'd be nice to know, to have some idea of what you should do in those situations. And also, I think it's just fun to know. I think guys like knowing. I mean, I love learning or reading about different skills and sort of diehard situations, because I like to know that, hey, if I ever find myself in that situation, I could possibly do something about it. So yeah, I think it's manly to be prepared for whatever situation you find yourself in.
Yeah, so it's one of those situations where they're not likely to happen, but if they ever do, the stakes are so high. If you're not prepared, then you're dead. So better to cover your bases, huh?
Right.
To that end, you talk frequently on your podcast and in the book about developing situational awareness. Now, I think this one is particularly important in an age where most people are completely checked out, staring at their smart devices, and not the least bit present in the moment. Explain what situational awareness is and how a situationally aware man sizes up a room.
So situational awareness requires you first just to be observant. It means you need to look around. You don't have to be paranoid. There's a gun instructor, Cooper is his last name, and he came up with these sort of color codes of, you know, sort of awareness levels. And he says you should always find yourself in condition yellow, which is sort of a relaxed alert. So you're not paranoid, you're not freaking out, but you're checking things out. As you're checking things out in a situation or in an area, you want to establish baselines. Baselines are what's normal for that circumstance you find yourself in. So if you're in a restaurant, you know, what's normal is, you know, patrons are eating their food, waiters are coming back from their kitchen. That's normal. And people are pretty much chill. After you've established those baselines, you want to look for anomalies. Anomalies are things that are out of place, things that shouldn't be going on, that are kind of, that aren't going in line with the baseline. If someone's up standing, yelling, sort of just crazy person, like that's an anomaly. So you want to keep an eye out for that. If you see an anomaly and you're observing and it sort of escalates, and you think this is possibly a threat, then you need to take action for that. So part of situational awareness is having a plan. Mm-hmm. You know, what are you going to do when things go bad? You know, we want to be situationally aware. Go into that room with that mentality, just establish baselines immediately, look for anomalies, but also things you can do is, you know, put yourself in a place where you can observe better. So, you always have your back to the wall so you can always see the exits in a place. So if you're going to a restaurant or someplace, you know, ask to be seated someplace where you can sort of see where all the entrances and exits are, and make sure you can, you have your back to the wall, right?
Yeah.
That's one thing you can do. Also, I mean, just anytime you go into a public building, like know where the exits are. That's one thing I do every time I go into a public building. Doesn't matter where. Like, I want to know where all the exits are, so in case something does happen, I can get me and my family out of there as fast as possible. And you have to kind of think about this. You have to think about the not so obvious exits as well. So say you're in a grocery store. You might see the front exit. You might see an exit on the side, but there's also exits kind of back where the employees go, right? That goes out to the back. So you got to think about that too. Like, oh, something happens, I'm going to go to that exit. And then always have a plan. Just have an idea of what you're going to do if something happens. You see that anomaly, it raises to a level that is a threat. Like, have a plan what you're going to do. So if the threat's far away from you, your best bet is to get out of there as fast as possible. If he's really, really close to you, then you may need to attack and, you know, fight and disarm him and whatever. So it doesn't mean you're paranoid. It just means you're looking around and then just having a plan of what you're going to do whenever there is a threat.
It's also important not to panic or buckle under pressure. How do you manage stress in a high stakes situation like that?
Part of it is just having a plan. That helps out a lot. Knowing what you should do and going over it in your mind, visualizing it over and over again, what you would do and what would you do if something went wrong and not according to plan. You need to visualize that. So that can help a lot. Use tactical breathing. This is breathing in for 4 seconds, holding your breath for 4 seconds, breathing out for 4 seconds, and then doing that 4 times. So just breathing and making sure you're getting oxygen can really help calm you down. So those two things, just having a plan, visualizing, knowing what you would do in certain situations, and then remembering to breathe can do a lot to keep you cool, calm, and collected.
We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with more with Brett McKay when we come back in just a moment. If you're interested in my conversation with Brett McKay, then you might enjoy one of his Art of Manliness books. And right now, you can download the audio versions of these books for free with a special promotion just for our listeners from audible.com. Just go to audibletrial.com/kickassnews for a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook download, which can be one of Brett McKay's Art of Manliness books or any of Audible's 180,000 titles. That's audibletrial.com/kickassnews. Or click on the sponsor link in our webpage to download the free audiobook of your choice. And now, back to the show. Like we said earlier, this is not all just fun and games, James Bond stuff. Much of it is about being able to protect your family. You have a whole chapter actually dedicated to family. In particular, you have quite a bit of advice for new dads. Changing diapers, that's not just the wife's duty?
Yeah, well, I mean, so for some families it is. but, you know, I changed diapers. I didn't mind doing it. You're going to have to do it at some point probably. How to avoid making a complete mess of it and what to do when things, when you have blowouts and things like that. But like we talk about like a lot of the new dad stuff. I think as for me as a new dad, the mindset shift was really hard. Cause those first few months, like this, you have this creature in your house that has no idea what's going on and just screams. It can't communicate with you. So you're going to, you know, lose some sleep. You're going to have this baby screaming all the time and it can get like you just want to throw the baby out the window. but you just have to learn how to just stay cool, calm, and collected. Use some of that tactical breathing and you'll get through it. But besides that, we talk about, not just for dads, but like if you're not a dad, sections in there about how to be an awesome uncle. I think the uncle is underappreciated member of the family. Like his job for me, like they're not a parent, but they're an adult, right?
Right.
But because of that dynamic, they have some authority, but like since they're not a parent, they're there to like teach the nieces and nephews like all the dangerous, cool stuff that their parents won't let them do. I know my uncles were like that. They're the ones that introduced me to things, you know, fireworks and building hay forts and jumping off of, hay lofts and just doing crazy stuff that if my parents knew that we were doing, like they would be flipping their wigs. But you know, that's what the uncles are there for, sort of, supervising risk taking, so kids can become more resilient.
What are some of the tips for being an awesome uncle?
Just being a part of your kids' lives, of your nieces and nephews' lives. So, send them cards. You know, I remember like I had a lot of uncles and aunts that sent me cards on a regular basis, something I tried to do, and it meant a lot to me. And not just sending money, but sending little notes and just doing just fun stuff with them, like the cool, dangerous stuff, teaching them the stuff that kids are supposed to know, that's sort of dangerous, sort of risky. So those are my tips. Just teaching the cool stuff that kids should know.
Yeah. Now, you said if you get frustrated as a new dad, don't throw your baby out the window. But you do say that you can use your baby as exercise equipment. I saw my brother do this with his baby. Talk about multitasking. How do you use your baby as exercise equipment and do it safely?
Do it safely.
More
right.
for the so, baby than you.
If you have a baby carrier, right, it's got a handle. You put the baby in there and you have an instant kettlebell. Pretty much. So you can shoulder press the baby while they're in the carrier. You can swing them, sort of do kettlebell swings while they're in there. You can take them out of the carrier, hold them and sort of use them as a kettlebell or a medicine ball to do sort of a goblet squat. There's a lot you can do. And it's good for the kids, right? Like it's sort of it's a little bit of rough housing. We've written about rough housing on the site before, and it has all these amazing benefits. Like rough housing makes your kids awesome. It teaches them resilience. It teaches them how to be more moral, surprisingly, because it's probably not, it doesn't apply to like newborns, but, you know, toddlers, whenever you're play fighting, they have to learn like, okay, what's within the bounds of roughhousing, right? So if they bite you, you can tell them, no, you don't bite, like, don't do that. So you're kind of teaching them rules and how to comply with those rules. And also it's just good for physical fitness. And this isn't just in humans, like this also applies to other animal species. They found that the males or the fathers are more likely to do sort of the rough and tumble play. Huh. And it's an important part of not only animal development, but human development as well.
But don't use your baby as a treadmill, right?
Yeah, I don't want to do that. That okay. would
go
not
to the gym
be good.
For that. You talk about the man as a technician in one of the chapters that covers everything from automotive skills to plumbing. You know, my dad comes from that generation, perhaps the last generation that was really skilled at fixing things, whether it was electrical wiring or building something. And he talks about how in his day, if something broke, you got out the toolkit and you fixed it. And he still always says, if you take good care of something, it'll last a lifetime. Now, if the sink gets clogged or a lamp doesn't work, most people call someone or throw it out and buy a new one. Do you feel that men's proficiency at repairing things and solving problems is perhaps somewhat under threat by the convenience of the digital age, when you can so easily replace something and have it on your doorstep within the same day?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I know I'm guilty of that as well. But yeah, it does come in handy. Like it's what in my experience, like I'd hate, you know, instead of waiting for some guy to show up at your house, wouldn't it be nice if you can just do it yourself? But yeah, a lot of guys don't do that anymore. They just, it's easier for them to call somebody. But I would say, the internet has made, doing stuff by yourself a lot easier, or there's like a less of a learning curve thanks to YouTube videos. Mm-hmm. I know there's been instances where I've had to fix something, like my dryer stopped working and I was like, what's going on here? And I looked on YouTube and diagnosed that, okay, I need to replace the belt. And I just watched this YouTube video and I was able to do it myself. And, I'll be honest, it felt pretty darn manly. Like I was able to like, hey, this thing wasn't working and I worked on it and now it works now.
Yeah.
So it does, doing stuff yourself, definitely provides, can save you money. But it can also, it provides like, just, it just makes you feel awesome. Mm-hmm. When you can fix something on your own, cause you have that confidence, you have the competence to, be self-reliant and be independent. And that feels awesome.
Now, there's one thing that I get made fun of for all the time. I carry a handkerchief. I think it's useful. Do you carry a handkerchief?
I do. Yeah, I carry it in the back pocket. It's something I picked up from my grandfather. And it's great for, you know, when you live in Oklahoma and it's 98 degrees with 100% humidity, it's just great for wiping sweat off. Some people find it gross. You know, you blow your nose into it and then put it back in. But, you know, just wash it and don't give it to anybody.
Yeah.
it's all you got to do. But, yeah, the hanky comes in, I think, really handy for the sweat. You have something at the ready to wipe yourself off.
And I find that a lot of restaurants have gotten increasingly environmental to the point that they don't provide towels in bathrooms. So they just have the hand dryer. And so I use a handkerchief to open bathroom doors, too.
I like that. It's MacGyvering it. It's nice.
A little bit. Well, it's more sissy MacGyvering it, I guess. But, you know, one thing that you talk about in the fashion section is shining shoes. Now, my dad taught me how to shine shoes, but, you know, when I'm out and about, I see so few people that actually take care of their shoes anymore. What is the proper care of one's shoes?
Right. So you're only going to shine shoes for like leather, right? Mm-hmm. So the thing is with shining your shoes, it doesn't just, not only makes your shoes look awesome, it also extends the life of your shoes, puts a protective over the leather, that allows them to last longer, waterproof and things like that. So shining your shoes, everyone's got their own method. You know, I learned from my dad, how to shine shoes. Like it was like usually like a Saturday night, he'd bust out all his boots. He wore cowboy boots. Bring out the shoe polish kit and he'd be watching, I don't know, like Mantic or like some, like, you know, In the Heat of the Night or something like that. Some yeah. Awesome cop show from the 80s. But you know, the way I do it now is, you want to clean off your shoe first. So take a rag or a sock, get all the dust off, maybe even like damp the cloth a little bit, just make sure you get all that dust off. Then you just get some polish, a little bit, put it on, make sure the polish matches the color of your shoe. So black on black, brown on brown. And then you just brush it. And what the brush does, it creates friction, the heat, and that's what gives you the shine. Mm-hmm. If you really want to get a super, super shine on the tip of your shoe, one trick is to use a lighter. And so you sort of light the polish a bit.
Really?
And then polish it. Yeah, that's a trick I learned from a guy in the military. That's what they use to get that mirror shine.
Now, you cover manliness and leadership in the office as well. One thing you talk about is the Eisenhower decision matrix, which pretty much is useful across life, not just in work. What is the Eisenhower decision matrix?
Yeah, this was based off of a quote that Eisenhower said, something about, you know, we often confuse the urgent for important. And so what the Eisenhower decision matrix does, it creates this four quadrant matrix. The x-axis, it's important, not important. The y-axis, urgent, not urgent. And so what you want to do is you want to avoid spending your time at all. You just completely eliminate things that aren't important and not urgent. So that's just like, you know, surfing around on the web, mindlessly, playing stupid smartphone games that I guess, you know, but I don't know, all these jewel games, I don't even know what they do. Jewel games, Candy Crush, whatever is, like, eliminate that. Not important, not urgent. The real trick though is trying to eliminate things that are urgent but not important. That's hard to figure out. It's like urgent stuff, like fires to put out, but they're not really important, right? They don't really progress you or move you forward on your long-term goals. So things just like email is urgent because people need a response right away. But oftentimes those emails aren't that important, right? The person sending it to you might think they're important, but they might not be important for you. So it's a matter of spending less time there, doing things to reduce the amount of time you spend in urgent but not important tasks. What you want to spend more of your time on are tasks that are important but not urgent. This stuff gets overlooked a lot, but this is the things that will help progress you and move you forward on your long-term goals. So important but not urgent is taking time to plan. That's you know, just planning, knowing your, here's another Eisenhower quote. Eisenhower said that plans are worthless, but planning is everything. And what he means by that is, like, things are going to change, but just the process of planning allows you to get your mind around the situation so that when things do change, you have enough of a knowledge of what's going on that you can adapt and be more flexible and change direction more quickly. So yeah. I think planning is one of those important but not urgent tasks. Just taking care of stuff. Because if you don't do the maintenance on your car, here's an example. You don't do the maintenance on your car, you're going to come a day where the car breaks down and suddenly you have an urgent task that could have been avoided if you just had took some time and did the maintenance. So that's another example of an important but not urgent task. Spending your time on the important but not urgent will help reduce the amount of time you spend in urgent tasks.
One of the things that I think most people have trouble with is making a pitch or a presentation to their boss, their team, their clients. And then even if they get through a good pitch, they might not know how to close the deal. Walk us briefly through the perfect pitch.
So the perfect pitch is first being prepared, like knowing exactly what you're going to say and rehearsing it as much as possible. I don't know if you ever watched Shark Tank. It's one of our family's favorite show, but I'm always blown away by the people. You can tell the people who did not prepare at all for their pitch and it just comes off terribly. But then there's, like, every now and then you'll have, like, these kids who are like 12 years old and they just give the most amazing pitch ever because you can tell they just practiced and practiced and practiced. And not only that, they knew their stuff so well that they could answer any question that one of the sharks brought up to them. There's a lot you can learn from there. Practice your pitch as much as possible, and then just know everything about what you're pitching so that you can answer any question that someone might have, whether it's a client or your boss. And if you don't know an answer to a question they might have, which might happen, you don't just say I don't know. You don't want to give an answer that's not right. So don't do that. Don't make stuff up. But say, I don't know that right now, but I can find out for you as soon as possible and get that to you. So you want to, it's okay to say, I don't know, but as long as you follow up with like, I will let you know as soon as possible. Yeah. And then after you do the pitch, you want to make sure you follow through, and do a follow up and say, you know, do you have any questions on what I presented? Is there anything, do you have any doubts or you have anything, any concerns about what I said or about the presentation? So that you can use that time to resolve doubts. And then once you resolve those doubts, you can make the pitch again and, you know, possibly refine it and then do what you can to close the deal.
What do you think is the biggest mistake that men make in dealing with the opposite sex?
Man, that's because there's all sorts of mistakes guys can make dealing with the opposite sex. I mean, yeah, I think you have to understand that men and women oftentimes the way they deal with the problem, they're different. Right. Mm-hmm. Generally, men like to, if there's a problem, they want to solve it. They want to do something to solve that problem. Women sometimes will want to just talk about it, you know, commiserate and sort of, you know, have someone listen to their problem. I know I've encountered that with my own wife when she say, I got this problem. And I'll be like, hey, all right, here's what we're going to do. You can do this. Here's a solution. She's like, no, I don't want a solution. I just want you to listen to me. And like, mm-hmm. I want to talk about it. I'm like, okay. And so you do that. So that's one thing to keep in mind. You got to realize how they're thinking and maybe adjust yourself there. I mean, that's the one I can think of off the top of my head, just being married, thinking that, you know, a woman is approaching life the same way you are, usually not the case.
Yeah. Well, before we go, do you have a personal hero who's sort of the manly ideal for you?
Yeah, of course. That's easy, man. Theodore Roosevelt.
Yeah.
He's sort of the patron saint of the art of manliness. What I love about Roosevelt is his just vitality. This is a guy, you know, when he was 12 years old, had asthma, and he was sort of a nerd. He was like really bookish
right.
and nerdy. His dad told him, you need to build your body now. And as a 12-year-old, he took this to heart, and he created like a little gym inside his New York City brownstone. I've actually been there. It's pretty cool. Had some parallel bars and Indian clubs and medicine balls and started exercising every day to sort of overcome his asthma. Took long hikes. As a young man, he boxed at Harvard. And then, you know, his wife and his mom died on the same day, February right. 14th. He decided to go out to the Dakota Badlands and try his hand at ranching. Did that, and he was just out there. And what was crazy, you know, he was sort of like a city slicker, but the cowboys accepted him because he had that mentality of just I'm a tough dude. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you know, hunting in Africa, he you know explored the River of Doubt after his presidency. During his presidency, he boxed and did judo in the White House, took, you know, press reporters on these just hikes around Washington, D.C., skinny dipped in the Potomac, came up with his own regiment and charged San Juan Hill during the Spanish-American War.
Right.
So he had that sort of those hard virtues that we admire in men, courage, right. that martial spirit. But then he also was able to temper it with some of those more softer virtues. Guy was super smart. He read just thousands of books in his lifetime, wrote hundreds of books right. in his lifetime and articles. And also he had, his son said that he had the tenderness of a woman. He was a good family man. To me, he's like the perfect example of sort of a well-rounded man and what we're trying to shoot for here at the Art of Manliness.
Favorite manly quote?
I mean, you can't go wrong with Teddy Roosevelt's Man in the Arena speech. Mm-hmm. There's also, he had another quote that I like. It says, if we don't keep the barbarian virtues, then the civilized ones will be of little avail. Mm-hmm. Just basically saying, you know, if we want to keep this nice civilization that we have, this sort of this refined idea of we've developed, we got to be willing to fight for it and fight for it physically.
Yeah, I don't know anyone who crammed more into one lifetime than Teddy Roosevelt. Well, again, the book is called The Illustrated Art of Manliness, The Essential How-To Guide, Survival, Chivalry, Self-Defense, Style, Car Repair, and More by Brett McKay. You can also check out his website at artofmanliness.com and the Art of Manliness podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Brett McKay, thanks for talking with me.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks again to Brett McKay for joining me on the podcast.
you can order his new book, The Illustrated Art of Manliness, the essential how-to guide to survival, chivalry, self-defense, style, car repair, and more on Amazon. Or download the audiobook for free with a special trial offer just for our listeners at audibletrial.com/kickassnews. For lots more, check out artofmanliness.com and subscribe to the Art of Manliness podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow Brett McKay on Twitter at Brett McKay. Be sure to subscribe to Kickass News on iTunes and leave us a review while you're there. Don't forget to take our listener survey. It only takes 5 minutes at podsurvey.com/kick. You can visit Kickass News on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Kickass News Pod. And be sure to recommend Kickass News to your friends on your social media. And if you really want to help out, then donate to our GoFundMe campaign at gofundme.com/kickassnews or click on the donate button at kickassnews.com. As always, I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. For now, though, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kickass News. Kickass News is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.